RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val and
Beans. Another little introduction for us today, Frank, before we pass it on over to the interview with Representative Steve Toth from Texas.
Now, this is going to be interesting.
He was great. He was very, very, you'll like this one for sure. I keep on getting these interviews coming in at the late hours of the day where I'm like, all right, I can't turn it down.
It's been great. Interviews are, I mean, they're huge, especially right now. There's so many people doing good things that need attention because the eye of Sauron, that is our media, is going to ignore anything of actual consequence.
Well, I'm finding that a lot of people who are actually covering the election integrity issue the way it should be are getting interviews with folks to discuss them that, you know, normally you'd see on the dumbass legacy media.
Right.
But when I asked him, you know, first of all, thank you so much for what you're doing. He introduced a bill to have an audit in Texas of every county with more than a population of 450,000, a full forensic audit in every county in Texas that has that population. And I said, where are you getting your information from to be educated on this the way you are? And he said, well, I don't watch the news, that's for sure. So.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
where
you
we're
watch
at.
The news. Does not help at all. Mm-mm. It does not help.
Mm-mm. Mark Fincham just launched a campaign this morning. I just shared it in my Telegram room. She said, we're starting the hashtag prove it campaign right now. I am sick and tired of the liberal officials and media gaslighting us with fictitious attacks about the election, but they're doing everything they can to stop the forensic audits and efforts to find out the truth. We've already shown evidence of fraud. Now it's that time for them to prove it wasn't. So I want them to hashtag prove it. Prove that there was no fraud in the election. Prove that the machines can't access the internet. Prove that the ballots were all there. Prove that the votes weren't changed. Prove that the 3 a.m. November 4th vote dump was legitimate. Prove that Sharpies weren't given to Trump voters on election day. Prove that our elections weren't hacked. Prove it.
Yeah, clear cut.
And you can transmit this over, because I spent a good chunk of the day yesterday, and I'll be continuing today, going over the America's Frontline Doctors lawsuit to halt the temporary injunction.
I didn't read it.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I'm not even halfway through it yet, and I've been taking out the important points, just like I used to do on Twitter, let me tell you something. I was in my element yesterday doing this stuff. I was like, thank God I'm home. I'm home. Interacting with people, you know, tossing things back and forth. It was just the most invigorating day for me yesterday. And I was so excited. And so this lawsuit, you know, Jen Psaki is out there everywhere talking about how, you know, there, you know, people that are saying that this vaccine causes fertility issues or misinformation 12 or whatever they're calling it. And I'm like, do you have any data at all to prove that it doesn't do that? No, they have nothing.
First of all, at first, weren't they telling people to if you were planning on getting pregnant or just got pregnant, hold off on even getting this because we don't know really anything and all the testing is being done right now?
I don't remember that, but there are pregnant women who are getting this vaccine. And I came across an absolutely disgusting statistic in their website that is actually cited and provable. This, on their lawsuit. This lawsuit is like the idiot's guide to COVID. If you wanted to give somebody a guide with fully sourced, you know, peer-reviewed studied information about this vaccine and the pandemic itself, this is what you give them. Here's the point for reproductive health under that heading in their lawsuit. The spike proteins our bodies are instructed to manufacture by the shots are in the same family as other proteins that are found in sperm, your ovaries, and the placenta. Antibodies created to combat the spike protein could interact with similar naturally occurring proteins in the reproductive system. There is no data provided about this at all from the vaccine manufacturers. And the New England Journal of Medicine did a study that has shown that pregnant women receiving shots during the first or second trimester suffer an 82% spontaneous abortion rate. That is 4 out of 5 of the women lost their babies.
I heard similar statistics like that coming out of the UK in particular.
The thing about it is this. Let's just take it on a very logical tack. Nobody argues that for some people, COVID is really horrible. Look at what happened to Rich Higgins.
Yeah.
He was ravaged by this virus. He's barely clinging on to life. Months later, it's terrible. Terrible. So,
and, you know, the thing with Rich that was horrible because is that I was wondering why he wasn't answering my texts and all that stuff, because I wanted to get him back on the show. And then I saw this happen. I said, oh, my God.
You know, I'm going to try and find the GoFundMe link for him. And
yeah, I've shared it several times. I sent two little donations, whatever I can do. It was beyond me. I couldn't believe it.
So he had all of his surgeries. He's in for a long haul. He's got more surgeries he has to have. One of the things he's actually focused on now is the blood shortage, because he needed several blood transfusions. And that comes up in the lawsuit as well, by the way. But in terms of the reproductive health and the rest of this in general, you know that COVID can be horrible for a lot of people. And for a lot of people, they get through COVID like it's nothing, right? However, what's being learned now over a year and a half in is so much more than we knew when this vaccine started, so much more than we knew yesterday. Every single day, they're learning more about this virus and how it affects the human body. And one of the things that they have learned in their studies is that it's not necessarily actually even a cytokine storm that damages your organs and your blood and your brain, but the spike protein itself. So the spike protein can cross the blood-brain barrier. Terrifying, which they say in their lawsuit, things that usually something crossing the blood brain barrier is, quote, incompatible with life.
Well, where I have gone from there, what I've read, there was this one. It looked to be a medical. What do we have over here? Hold on a second. Let me see. Side effect. Vaccinated. Where the hell is it? Okay. So this is from, take a look at this. Can you pause for a second?
Yeah. So Frank has sent me a link to what looks like a research article.
Research article penned by one Bart Klassen, MD. And the title of it is called COVID-19 RNA-based vaccines and the risk of prion disease.
Now, this was received in December of 2020 and approved in February of 2021.
Yeah. And here's the abstract. Now, a lot of this is very technical that I don't know what's going on here, but I can there's a few conclusions that could be drawn. It says development of new vaccine technology has been plagued with problems in the past. The current RNA-based SARS-CoV-2 vaccines were approved in the U.S. using an emergency use order without extensive long-term safety testing. In this paper, Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine was evaluated for the potential to induce prion-based disease in vaccine recipients. The RNA sequence of the vaccine, as well as the spike protein target interaction, were analyzed for the potential to convert intracellular RNA binding proteins, TARDNA binding protein, and fused in sarcoma into their pathologic prion conformations. The results indicate that the vaccine RNA has specific sequences that may induce TDP43 and FUS to fold into their pathologic prion conformations. The current analysis, a total of 16 UG tandem repeats were identified and additional rich sequences were identified. Two sequences were found. And what they're saying is, furthermore, the spike protein created by the translation of the vaccine RNA binds into converting these enzymes and whatnot. And they're saying that if it creates these prions, it could cause these crystals to grow inside of the brain, which can cause things from ALS, front temporal lobar degeneration, and Alzheimer's disease and other neurological degenerative diseases. Even if these crystals grow large enough, if they were to be able to cut into any kind of blood vessels that are in the brain to bleed out. This is one thing I've seen here. But here's the thing. You brought up, the reason why I brought this up, because you're talking about the blood-brain barrier. Well, it's known that men have half the blood-brain barrier than women do, which is a lot of the reason why people say that those who do suffer the general vaccine injuries, it's a lot more effective. They affect men a lot more, boys a lot more than girls, because they have a thicker blood-brain barrier than girls do. But when it comes to this, if there is a risk that some of these things that are being injected right now could actually cause premature dementia and Alzheimer's, it's one thing to have an 85-year-old man or woman with dementia, you know, it's horrible no matter what. But if they are older, a little infirm, they can't get around. Can you imagine any part of society where you have 20 to 40 year old dementia riddled men, fully physically abled men running around confused? Can you imagine what's going to happen to the homeless population if something like this is real? It also makes me think about that weird statement that Joe Biden made earlier on this year about how in the future we're going to have a lot of Alzheimer's patients.
Oh, my God.
You remember that?
Yes.
What was that weird thing you said? Then I read this.
You know what's interesting to me about this, though? The more I'm reading it while you're talking to me, it contains a lot of information about here how zinc plays a factor. And that's, I would like to dig into that a little more, because we know zinc has inhibited COVID-19. It's part of the Zelenko protocol.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to me how zinc plays a role here with the vaccine in some way. Interesting. So I'm going to look into that a little bit. But this is a good paper. My point is only basically that we know what the spike protein does. They're learning more about it every single day, Frank, right? Why on God's green earth would you inject yourself with a computer program, for lack of a better word, to make your body become a spike protein creating machine? You're literally causing your body to create spike protein all day long, every single day, in every single cell, when that's what COVID is. Why would anybody do that? Like, they don't understand. No, people don't understand how this thing works. And the lawsuit goes through all of this, basically, like, not coming to that conclusion, but like, yet anyway, but going through it. And you know what bothers me about it, honestly, is that everybody in like our kind of circles or whatever seized on this sensationalized 45,000 people have died clip. You saw it, I'm sure.
Well, I know I saw the clip and read a little bit of the lawsuit that was attached to it, but I hadn't, you know, I was just one of those things where you see something that big, I always just sit back and wait.
Well, it's in the lawsuit, but it's one of those things that, like, taking your focus and putting it on that is almost like taking your, it's almost like if this whistleblower, which I'll explain in a second, comes out and ends up being, you know, doesn't have the goods, or, you know, they signed an affidavit under penalty of perjury, which is fine. You know, we've seen that a lot of times. There have been people submitting affidavits in some of the election integrity cases who have signed under penalty of perjury and have been lying through their freaking teeth. So, you know, that it is what it is. But what they say basically is that this Jane Doe works for Medicaid, Medicare as a contractor, and does their data analysis and programming and you know, basically codes little, they find fraud. They're fraud sniffers. So they use computer programming to find instances of fraud and stuff like that inside of the Medicaid system. So they're in the data all the time to see who's abusing the system. I actually, this part of it is literally, it's literally like, I don't know, a paragraph of the lawsuit. I can actually just read it. I'm going to open it right now. I'm just going to read it to you. It's page 41. It's only a paragraph of an otherwise lengthy, so beneficial lawsuit that everybody needs to read. Hold on. Whistleblower testimony. Okay. Plaintiff's expert, Jane Doe, is a computer programmer with subject matter expertise in the healthcare data analytics field and access to Medicare and Medicaid data maintained by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The declaration is included in here. Over the last 20 years, she's developed over 100 distinct healthcare fraud detection algorithms for use in the public and private sectors. In her expert opinion, VAERS underreports deaths caused by the vaccines as by a conservative factor of at least 5. As of July 9th, 2021, VAERS reported 9,048 deaths. They added 6,200 today, by the way, caused by the vaccines. Associated with the vaccines. Jane Doe queried data from CMS medical claims and has determined that the number of deaths occurring within 3 days of injection with the vaccine exceeds those reported by VAERS by a factor of at least 5, indicating that the true number of deaths caused by vaccines is at least 45,000. She notes that in the 1976 swine flu vaccine campaign, in which 25% of the U.S. population at the time, 55 million Americans, were vaccinated, the swine flu vaccine was deemed dangerous and unsafe and removed from the market, even though the vaccine resulted in only 53 deaths.
Well, my question is, I don't know, you say sensationalized 45,000 or – but it doesn't – it's not something that I would doubt, especially since
no.
on you have 10,000 – what do you have, 11,000 on the books at VAERS already with 500,000 reported injuries.
Yeah.
And if we know that could be as little as 1%
yes.
of – reality, then 45,000 can actually be dwarfed.
I know, and I'm not doubting it. I'm just saying that by focusing solely on that and the way it was presented and the way people got it, it just it takes away from the rest of this data of the people, not only the people who have sadly passed away, which they'll never be able to, quote, prove, right? This is the argument we're going to get. They didn't die. They were on Medicaid. That's the virtue signaling BS we're going to get from the people who are too late to save anyway. But, you know, there are so many people out there that the rest of this information by narrowing down to one paragraph in here, it, in my opinion, like there's so many other things in here that are so important, like that was sensationalized and they sensationalized it in such a way when these folks released it that it was capitalized on by other people saying, look at these people. They're idiots. Look at how they're excited about people dying. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the excitement stuff. No, some people, they're excited about this, excited about that. No, I do feel like there is a contingent of people who really don't understand what's happening right now. And then they're not really putting two and two together. They don't feel the loss yet.
It has
because there is gloating going on both ends.
Yeah, I can't. I don't care if somebody is a Democrat, a Republican, a progressive. This is the human species we're talking about here.
This is life. It's very serious. I don't think that all people. There are some people I think are stupid. 100%. And they present themselves. There's other people who just really don't want any problems and just know that they are not qualified enough to know anything about biochemistry and this like that. And they just defer to professionals that they've always trusted. So to call them stupid is ridiculous. They're not unintelligent. There's just a lot. There's a lot of stuff going on here. There are people out there who go and become warriors for some kind of a cause. It's completely politically driven, and it's creating so many different odd factions, and the factioning off of people and the way that we see this and discuss this really diminishes the threat.
All of these whistleblower doctors that are stepping forward, they're all of all different political persuasions. They're not all Republican doctors. They're not. And the treatment that they get when they are brave enough to speak up shocks them because they're like, oh my gosh, I was like, that was me, you know, that was me before I realized we are like damaging the human race here. And this is the footnote real quick that they wrote about the Jane Doe plaintiff's expert. Jane Doe is a whistleblower who I'm not doubting that Jane Doe has good information. Don't get me wrong. I want to make sure I clarify that. I'm not saying that she's making it up or that she exaggerated it or anything. Plaintiff's expert Jane Doe is a whistleblower who fears for her personal safety and that of her family, and can't blame her, and reprisal, including termination and exclusion from her chosen profession for the duration of her working life, for disclosing the evidence contained in her declaration. Plaintiffs will present the court with a motion for an appropriately tailored protective order seeking to preserve the confidentiality of her identity. In the meantime, defendants are not prejudiced since they can respond to the substance of Jane Doe's declaration and challenge her expert qualifications without knowing her true identity. Plaintiff's counsel have in their possession a copy of the same declaration of Jane Doe signed by the witness in her actual name. So she does not want to go public. She does not. And she's going to try and keep her. She let them put the information in the lawsuit, understanding what could happen if it, you know what they're going to do. They're going to go after her.
Yeah.
And they're going to do everything they can to make sure that that is public, front and center, and that her life is ruined and that she never can work again and, you know, whatever, whatever, whatever. So.
Well, what they're doing on Facebook and what they're doing across social media, just with people who make any kind of statement after a family's death or.
Yeah.
I mean, during a funeral or it's the level of censorship and unpersoning.
Why?
Is.
Why do they want everyone to get this shot so badly, Frank? Why?
I can make some estimations. I don't know how controversial you want to get, but it's all a matter of how controversial you want to get.
You know, I was on Liz Callaway this morning and she asked the same question. What is the end game here? I don't understand. Like, what is it?
She has an AM FM radio.
Yeah, but we didn't get into any conspiracies because I can't. Yeah. Population control. You know, there's all kinds of things floating out there.
Population control.
Or killing off to get to the 500,000 or 500 million they want. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, it's almost like Darwinism at its finest here. It's terrifying. I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to have either millions, tens and hundreds of millions of people who have autoimmune disease and are maimed, suffering for the rest of their lives. Or we're going to have people just dying suddenly. Or we're going to have... when they are reintroduced to this vaccine or to this pathogen, they're going to get COVID in such a way that they perish. And they're going to say, it's because you guys wouldn't get the vaccine. So, you know, they're going to have to.
That way of thinking is a virus in itself.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? If you don't wear your seatbelt, mine won't work.
It's ridiculous.
When I was listening to that Dr. Leanna Wen again a couple of weeks ago when she showed up and said some other horrible anti-human, anti-liberty statement and anyway, I'm listening to her. And I'm saying, you know, for all the patting of the backs, they pat themselves on the backs. They cheer themselves on. They congratulate themselves for one thing or another. Why don't you go on out there and make a vaccine that fully protects the person who gets the injection so that you don't have to pretend to care about these people you hate so much, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you loathe so badly the people who do not want to follow you into oblivion. If your idea is so good, your technology is so good, why the hell, if you're so brilliant, did you stop short of creating a vaccine that actually prevents transmission, prevents infection? Why such a ridiculous, like, this is breakthrough technology that doesn't prevent transmission, doesn't prevent infection, only supposedly lessens the effects when you get it. It's like, what are you patting yourself on the back for? This sounds stupid.
I know. If you look at it objectively, it absolutely does. And, in their lawsuit, they say this thing called the ARR. The ARR is the basically how many – the impact of treatment by comparing the outcomes of a treated group and an untreated group. From that number, you can devise the need to vaccinate or the NNV. The NNV signifies the number of people who need the vaccine before any one person benefits from the vaccine being given at all. What is the point of the vaccine that does not even prevent disease is their question.
And the other point there too is if you have this vaccine that is going to force your body, program your body to produce these very specific spike proteins for the rest of your life. Why? Especially if there's always going to be another virus that comes around, something else. So, and it's all because everybody didn't get the vaccine. Now now we're just going to be producing these spike proteins for something that's useless?
Not only that, but they go through in the beginning here of how they go through how there wasn't even a pandemic at all, to be honest. They go through how the testing was absolutely flawed based on manufacturer instructions and all kinds of other science. They back it all up. They go through the coding change for COVID death and statistics. These are doctors doing this. This isn't some random person who walked in off the street who's a researcher. These are medical doctors, formerly very well respected in their fields and genius. I mean, Dr. Gold is a genius. She's a lawyer and a doctor. You know how, I'm sorry, you can't, she chose to be a doctor, but she also got her law degree. Really? Who does that?
You know.
Normal people don't do that. She's not just normal. Bored. Seriously. But anyway, I digress. We'll be back on Friday to talk more about this stuff and a story that we're breaking hopefully today on some more interesting information about Sharpiegate. Ah, goodness, Frank. Well, let's listen to this amazing interview with a someone with the intestinal fortitude to ask for an audit in a state that, quote, we won.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I was talking to Tony Schaefer last night, and he said, he even reiterated that need audits in all 50 states.
Yep.
If it happens to one state, it doesn't matter where it is. You just got to know. How bad was this? Where were we all going?
The people here in South Carolina are like, well, you know, there's no fraud here. We won by blah, blah, blah. There's no money to do these audits. There's no reason to. I'm like, you know, you guys, your constituents are all asking you over and over and over and over again. Look at some of these counties. We just learned the other day about millions of dollars in Facebook money flooding into South Carolina.
Yeah.
So anyway, you have been listening. And we'll continue to listen throughout this little exit to the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. And now the interview with the amazing representative from Texas, Steve Toth. So I am so blessed to be speaking with Representative Steve Toth from Texas, who most recently filed a bill to require forensic audits of the 2020 election in Texas counties with more than 455,000. Is it registered voters, Representative?
No, it's just population.
Population, even better. And, you know, this is something we're seeing happen all over the country. But before we get into the logic behind it and what you know, motivates you to write this bill, I want folks to get a better idea of who you are, what districts you represent, and kind of how you got to where you are right now. So you have the floor. Go ahead.
So I represent basically South Montgomery County, and we're a county of roughly 600,000 people. I'm a small business owner and I'm a pastor. Back in 2009, the state of Texas passed a bill that almost put me out of business, and it made me so mad I decided to run for office.
And you won.
Sure. And won. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And so you've done a lot. You've done a lot on CRT, which is something that my outlet Uncover DC has covered extensively because, you know, the culture aspect of things is super important as we move forward. And I think that a lot of people were kind of in the dark about how important it actually was. Before we get into election integrity, let's speak to that bill a little bit. You authored that bill and it passed. So tell us a little bit behind that particular legislation.
So House Bill 3979, it really reads like something out of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And the crazy thing is the Democrats have to make their mind up. Either critical race theory is the greatest thing in the world or it's not being taught at all. And, you know, I'm getting both sides. Some are saying critical race theory is wonderful, but those Democrats that are cognizant of the fact that it really is being taught are saying, no, it's not being taught in the school. So which is it? Either it's a wonderful thing and it's being taught or it's not being taught. They can't make their mind up what argument to make. But the crazy thing is that more and more as we come through the COVID thing and we went through an entire year of virtual classrooms, parents have been looking over their children's shoulder and hearing this garbage. And just last night, the Episcopal High School of Houston, one of the parents sent me a video of a teacher that was teaching high school kids that she has white privilege and she's awful and they're awful and you should feel awful that you have white privilege. And the United States was founded on slavery and oppression and all this baloney that they're teaching our children. It's complete hogwash, and it's all based on the 1619 Project and saying that the United States was founded on the backs of African-American people and just how awful that is. And again, if you just, you know, look into it, just do some basic research on the 1619 Project. Even the author, when the author was challenged about the validity of it by historians on both the left and the right, Nicole Hannah Jones said, look, it's not a historical piece. It's a journalistic piece, which it's really sad that journalism isn't historically accurate.
I mean, right? that answer in and of itself is enough to drive me insane. And it's so funny that you said that, because it brings me to another question. You know, we're seeing good representatives step up all over the country, which is giving, you know, people like myself and Americans in general kind of like this breath of fresh air that people are actually standing up for what's right for once. How are you,
right,
as an individual, you know, where do you get your information from? Because you're certainly not seeing a lot of this on what I call legacy media or even television. So how are you educating yourself on this in the sea of disinformation from leftist media?
Well, for one, I'm doing my own research. So I'm reading a lot of stuff by Ibram X. Kendi right now. I'm reading his stuff, which it's kind of like you can only take it in small bits in between moments of intense, nausea. It's terrible stuff. It's just some of the most egregious stuff. And you read about this and you're like, you know, my heart in one sense breaks for Ibram Kendi. When you see the kind of bitterness and hatred that he was exposed to as a young man, and you come to understand why he feels the way he feels. But we don't base truth on experiences. You base truth on empirical data and evidence, and you base truth on the Word of God. And the truth of the Word of God says in Christ, there's neither male nor female, Jew nor Greek, and that God is not a distinguisher of men. Yet Ibram Kendi, because of the experiences that he's had as a child, wants us to believe in this thing called white privilege and wants us to believe that we should judge each other based on the color of our skin rather than the content of our character. It's really sad.
It is sad. And you like almost hope that somebody would have rescued along the way to show, you know, that's not, at least in my opinion, a common occurrence nowadays. Like people are very, if it were a common occurrence, if we were an inherently racist nation, in my opinion, calling someone a racist wouldn't be something that was used to target folks or as an insult. You'd step, you know, you'd embrace it or it wouldn't matter. People being called racist is an insult and it's horrible and it's derogatory. If it weren't taken that way, I think we could argue the opposite, right? We have an issue in this country with communism shrouded in social justice, and that's kind of what we're witnessing. So seeing states like Texas and representatives like yourself like step up to the plate on this is really it's great. It's fantastic to cherish our American heritage.
The really frustrating thing is that they can't argue with the content of the bill. Content of the bill just says you can't discriminate against people because of their skin, color, or their gender. So instead, what they do is they conflate elements of the bill to say, well, you don't want to teach the history of America, even though the bill actually recognizes slavery. And it mentions slavery. It mentions Jim Crow. And the reality is that slavery was and is evil. And the reality is that, as many historians have said, the United States in 1776, we had a birth defect, and that was slavery that existed in the South. And yes, there was institutional racism in the South, where institutions of government sustained that racism. But does that exist today? And the answer is absolutely not. It does not exist today. Are there racists today? There sure are. I share a story. When I was a Houston area sales manager for a company, I hired an African-American guy, and the district director said to me, "Steve, you can't hire that guy." And I said, "Well, I did hire him." And he said, "Well, no one's going to buy our product." And then he said, "From an N-word," and he said the N-word. And I said, "Well, I guess you've got a problem then, because I've already hired him. And if you want to fire him, he's going to have an issue, and he's going to be able to bring this company up on charges against the Texas Workforce Commission." And the reality is that guy went on to be one of the most successful sales reps that they had in Texas. And it's crazy, because that white guy, Larry, he believed that people should be judged by the color of their skin and not the content of their character. He is a racist in keeping with Ibram Kendi, who's a racist, and these woke teachers that want to believe that children should be judged by the color of their skin. We can't have it.
Agreed. I love it. I love hearing this. It's like, it's again, I said this a couple of times, but it is a breath of fresh air, because Americans who are getting, you know, you're seeing it all over, people getting super involved in their school board and local issues and hyper local issues. And a lot of that is stemming from what they've seen over the past year and also what they've seen in November. So let's transition a little bit to now election integrity. So there's like a bunch of different camps here. There's the camp that says, well, Texas, Trump won. You know, why would you want to audit Texas? And what do you say to folks who say that?
Because I look at data from 2018. I look at information from 2016. You know, the Democrats cried Russia, 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 Russia after 2016. They swore that there was election tampering. They swore that there was fraud. They swore that Vladimir Putin had tapped into all the electronic voting machines and had skewed the result. They said that. The Democrats said that. Now, let's go back to 2009 when we brought voter ID to the state of Texas. And it was then that Rafael Enchia, from the back microphone in a debate with Patricia Harless, said voter ID is not the issue. The issue is mail-in ballots. That's where all the fraud is taking place. That's what Rafael Enchia said. He said that the vast majority of the voter fraud that's taking place in the state of Texas is not being addressed, which is mail-in ballots. That was what a Democrat said.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I choose to take Enchia at his word. Let's move ahead to 2018 and Pete Sessions' race. We know that there was fraud in 2018. We had forensic digital forensic auditors, cyber auditors, that looked at just Pete Sessions' race and said there were thousands and thousands of lines of coding errors that occurred that left the decision of those ballots up to an election judge. And so, yes, I believe that there was fraud, and we need to get to the bottom of it. I mean, even the Democrats have gone from saying there is no fraud, which is what they said, you know, 7-8 months ago, there's no fraud. Now they say, well, it's not widespread fraud. Well, how much fraud does it take for you as Democrats to consider it widespread?
It only matters when that fraud could result in a Democrat not being reelected. You know, I'd add to that, you know, they don't really care about voter disenfranchisement, because if you take a look at South Texas, you'll know that there was a ridiculously massive swing towards the R vote down in South Texas in 2020. And so they don't care if those folks are disenfranchised.
Well, the question is, why did we see that uptick down there? And the reality is that because they weren't expecting it, right?
Yep.
And so they didn't have to put any fraudulent measures. They didn't think they had to put any fraudulent measures in place for Mr. Biden down there, because Hillary won it by, you know, 40 or 50 points. But this time around, they had no clue that Spanish speaking people were going to turn out in such huge numbers for Donald Trump.
No, and I think that happened with minorities across the board, and there are numbers that indicate that. And it's funny, because if you take a look at even the polling, they believed their own polls, which is baffling to me, because, you know, if you know how polls are being run, you'll laugh too. I mean, how they could believe those numbers was beyond me, especially given what we were seeing in the streets and elsewhere with activists out in the streets with signs, car parades, all kinds of stuff. So we'll quickly, let's focus on 2018. I'm just curious your interpretation of if you've even looked into the Ted Cruz Beto O'Rourke race.
Yeah. So there's no way that Greg Abbott got, I mean, Greg Abbott, I believe that Greg Abbott got the number of votes that he got received, but there's no way that Ted got 3 million less votes than him.
Mm-hmm.
That's impossible. There's not some hangover from 2016 when Ted Cruz was sideways with Donald Trump. Those two had kissed and made up, and Cruz was President Trump's biggest supporter in the state of Texas. So there's just no way. There's no way that you had a 3 million under vote count between the two of them. It didn't happen.
So the detractors will say, well, you guys knew, and I don't know that you knew about this in 2018. I think it just came to your attention recently, but people were trying to get this information from these forensic guys into the hands of folks in Texas. Can you answer if that's the reason they decided not to move forward with Dominion machines in Texas?
I honestly can't respond to that. I don't know what the truth is on that. So I don't want to enter any conjecture.
Much rather that answer, trust me. They've been after Texas for a very long time. We know that for a fact. So now is the time after 2020, looking at the numbers, doing the analysis. How did you come to the determination of the population of each county? What made you pick that number?
We wanted a broad number of counties that we could draw on in order to find out, you know, what exactly we were looking at. I have a statistics background from the Harris poll, and while this isn't necessarily an issue for linear regression modeling, the sheer size of the audit will tell us if we have a big or small problem statewide. You don't have to sample the whole state. You don't have to go into the whole, you know, every single county across the state of Texas to find out if you've got a problem.
So you're looking to do, because it's not really defined, but I'm sure this is what you mean. You are looking to do.
When you do a forensic audit, you're allowing the forensic audit to give you direction, right? So let's say you're doing a forensic audit of books, or you're doing a forensic audit of a death scene. You're just allowing the evidence to take you in the direction that the evidence takes you in, right? So we're going to look at everything from military ballots to absentee ballots to the ballots that Harris County sent out to everybody. We're going to look at drive-through voting. We're going to look at curbside voting, which drive-through voting is illegal. Curbside voting is legal. To early voting, to election day. We're going to look at everything and just see where the evidence takes us. The first thing that we'll do, we're going to look at the total number of people that voted, and then see if that lines up with the number of votes that were cast.
Are you including inside of this audit, you know, full forensics and for kinematic artifacts on ballots and, you know, basically what Arizona and Maricopa County are doing? Is that the scope of what you're looking to do in Texas?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're actually individuals that do this. This is what they do.
So there are no, as Maricopa County officials are saying, certified auditors. They don't exist. There isn't a certified auditor by the EAC or the Elections Commission that, you know, they're certified to do this sort of work. So that's like kind of like a carrot they dangle out to make themselves seem good.
Yeah, but it's better because you still have cybersecurity companies that perform this kind of work as well. And you still have individuals, you still have attorneys that have a real strong understanding of election law, mm-hmm. as it pertains to whether or not the law was followed or not. So
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, it's important that folks understand, because when this bill came out yesterday, the overwhelming reaction was absolutely 100% positive. Like, wow, this is fantastic. You know, a state that we quote and won, we still want to know what happened. We know that there may be some issues. We want to fix them moving forward. But people were like, okay, there's a couple things that bother me. One was letting the governor, lieutenant governor, and secretary of state choose the auditors. Is there any reason why you thought that would be the best route? Are you open to changing it? Do you think they'll make a good choice?
I think they'll make a great choice. They're co-equal branches of government. And the Constitution for the state of Texas identifies the executive and legislative branches as co-equal branches of government. But they're only co-equal when you hear from both the House and the Senate. So it's imperative that the governor, lieutenant governor, and the speaker pick somebody to do this and to get the results back to us.
And then, you know, the timeline on it, I think, is great. You know, you're going to have this information in your hand. And when will this be up for vote, just out of curiosity?
Well, here's the big problem. The Democrats haven't come back, right? So we can't even hold hearings in the Texas House without a quorum, which is 100 people. So nothing's going to happen until they come back. And they're threatening to not come back until, you know, until August.
Well, now they all have COVID, right? So they're all in quarantine. Not yet.
Because they, you know, face masks on airplanes for me, but not for thee. Or face, how's that go? Face masks for thee, but not for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, through all their virtue signaling, they're saying you have to wear face masks, but evidently, you know, they will beer and on lines and not wear any masks, but make fun of Ted Cruz because he wasn't wearing a mask in between sips of coffee.
Yep.
It's so ridiculous.
It doesn't get more transparent, though, by the way. I mean, the American people see right through their nonsense. It's pretty laughable at this point. How horribly they were mocked. I mean, they were mocked incessantly. And they're all vaccinated, so you can have that argument as well at the end of the day. But so if they come back, then you can get this moving. If not, what are you going to do? Just adjust? Because I'm assuming you need this done by March. So if you need to put anything in place there in Texas to fix issues, you can get that done before the November 2022 election, right?
Correct. And so, you know, we're going to file it again. We're going to file again in August. If we don't get it done in July, and we're going to keep pushing it and pressing it. And frankly, if we don't get it done in special session, I'm going to file it again in the 88th legislative session. The whole idea that people, Democrat and Republican, would walk away and think that in any way, shape, or form, whether it's Russia, in 2016, or it's, you know, it's the accusations against, I'm trying to think of the name of the voter system, electronic voter system that was used in several counties here in the state of Texas. We've got to find this out. We've got to get to the bottom of it. It's not a partisan issue. It's a bipartisan issue. We've got to make sure that our votes are clean and transparent and authentic.
No, I yes, absolutely. And, you know, these bills don't happen in a vacuum. So you've had to have spoken to some of your colleagues and know sort of where you stand. Can you speak to the feeling there about this? Is everybody pretty much fully on board with it, or are there some holdouts, or what do you think?
There's a lot of excitement on the House floor this morning. So, and people are really encouraged. Members are really encouraged to hear from their constituents that they're excited about this. So it's all good.
That's fantastic. Is there anything that the public writ large, even if they are not in Texas, can do to help you guys advance this forward? Is there anything that you guys need?
More than anything, it's prayer.
Oh, I love that. It's true.
It's just reality. We're in a spiritual battle. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. And that is the struggle that Texas, that is the struggle that the United States is in right now. And to try and battle this in any other way, shape, or form will come to just failure. It was 2013, the 83rd legislative session, when we had 101 Republicans to 49 Democrats. And we had a near 2/3 majority in the Senate. And we're going to and we were going to put forth the fetal pain bill. And we thought, ah, we can handle this in special session in June. And sure enough, the Democrats rolled us with only one third of the Senate. Wendy Davis went into her filibuster and we failed.
Wow.
But the church showed up in July, and you went from a session where in June you had people literally chanting Hail Satan, Hail Satan, in the halls of Texas, in the halls of the Texas Capitol, Hail Satan, to the body of Christ coming and worshiping and praying and singing hymns and praise songs. And we got it done.
Wow.
And we need that same sense of commitment again from the body of Christ. The apathy is overwhelming right now. And I don't know what it's going to take to wake people up. I really don't.
I think you'd be surprised. Like, from where I sit, I see people saying that a lot. I see so much good happening. I mean, it's really incredible. And it's being driven by people like you, to be honest, because you're waking people up to the fact that they have actual representatives that care about their will. And that's what you're doing for your constituents right now by having, you know, the guts to do this, because you see what's happening. You know, I was talking to Cassandra earlier and I said, you know, it's funny because these positions, you know, how often has it been, very often until recently, that you've gotten national attention for things that you've done in the Texas House? Like, have you gotten national?
I mean, oh yeah. But I mean, that's typical. I mean, these reps, all the state reps, you know, they get, it's kind of like every news service has, you know, a different reporter who has a different hobby horse, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a different path. You know, it doesn't really matter what your bill is. Somebody's going to give you some national attention over it. So I don't think that's not necessarily something that drives it. It's just, we're all kind of used to that.
I see it on a much grander scale personally than I ever have before in this business. I've seen national outlets picking up small hyper local issues to focus on.
And I guess I'm not even watching the news right now.
Good for you.
I just kind of have a pretty myopic focus right now on just the things that are going on here. And so you probably have a better feel for it than I do.
No, that's fine. That's fine. My point was only to say that it's important that we get as many eyes and ears on what you guys are doing as we can, because I talked to Senator Sonny Borelli the other day, and you know, he was telling me, I said, what would you tell some of these other senators in other states that are going through issues like this to get them to have the courage to pull the trigger here on these audits? Because you're seeing it in Michigan. They're hamstrung in Wisconsin, Florida. I mean, I'm sorry, Georgia is they have more political capital to act than ever. And they're still sitting on their hands. So they're cowardly, in my opinion.
Well, it's frustrating because we were really hoping we would have actually introduced the bill a couple weeks earlier, but we've been trying to get a hold of President Trump to support the bill, but we couldn't get a hold of his office to get him to give us a statement. I'm sure he would have supported it. I don't know. Maybe it's a blessing that he hasn't come out publicly for it, because this really needs to be something that's very bipartisanship. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, this is a Republican, this is a red state, and I think it would have helped to have his support on the bill.
Well, who knows what's going to happen in the future with that? Because he, you know, he'll catch something written, and next thing you know, there's a note from his desk that references it. So you never know there. I have one last thing to chat with you about real quick. There is a little birdie that says that you guys are looking for, you know, there's an initiative to kind of get moms to lock arms, get super passionate about what's going on in our schools, what's going on in culture, to kind of stand up against what is evil, for lack of a better word. And if people want to get involved with that in your local area and get on board with it, how can I help you guys with that? Like, what kind of message can I help to share for you with the platform that I'm blessed with to help you guys in that effort?
Today resembles 2009 when millions of moms across the United States that heretofore were not at all engaged politically, that were only involved in, you know, loving their families and raising their kids. And then, you know, Barack Obama got elected and the United States took a hard turn to the left. The great unifier became the great disunity president. And it was then that the Tea Party movement started up. And we see 10 times the amount of energy today in 2021, post-COVID, and the engagement of moms, you know, approaching our office. We, you know, it's just, it's the providence of God. We had a woman that graduated from Liberty University that is heading up our coalition to help mobilize moms in Montgomery County. We just want to give moms a voice. And I think that there's probably nothing more frightening in the woods than a mother bear.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably more frightening in Montgomery County than moms.
Fantastic. It's fantastic. So if you were in Montgomery County in Texas, I'm sure that we could really get you get involved, get active, go help to, you know, help to make your voices heard. It's time for people to stop being quiet. It's time for the apathy to be gone. It's time for the fear, honestly, to be gone, because we have a lot of work to do. What do you think the work for you is going to be like once you start getting the reports back from the full forensic audit that you hope to have there in Texas? Legislatively, are you guys going to be busy changing legislation? How do you think you'll have to remedy some of this stuff?
Well, we're already working on a lot of remedies right now that are glaring, right? So we want to do more to provide protection for election workers to make sure that election judges are not removed from the process. We want to make sure that people have plenty of access to vote. And if you listen to the Democrats on TV, on MSNBC last night, you know, they're pressed over and over again. Can you give us Jessica Gonzalez, you know, Representative Gonzalez, can you give us some specifics of how people are being obstructed from voting? Well, I could give you hundreds of them, but what I'd really like to talk about is the presence of poll watchers. Poll watchers? That's what this is about, poll watchers? And then they went on this long diatribe about how poll watchers are there to intimidate people. Well, poll watchers aren't even allowed to talk to voters. And if they do talk to voters, they're kicked out. So that was just a bunch of malarkey. What this is about, over and over again, if you look at this piece of legislation, this legislation, more than any single thing, created standardized hours across the state of Texas so that small precincts, whether they're in large counties or in small rural counties, these precincts can open up whenever they want to. If they want to open up 2 hours late and close 3 hours early, they can't do that anymore. In years past, if you were in line on the third day of early voting and the polls closed at 5 o'clock, you had to go home. You didn't get to vote.
Wow.
And so for the 12 days of early voting, if you were in line when the polls closed, you didn't get to vote, which meant you may have had to come back a couple times because you couldn't get in there until you got off of work.
Wow.
Well, now it's basically all 12 days of early voting. The polls have to stay open as long as somebody is in line. That added, you know, tons of opportunity for people to vote that heretofore couldn't. Also, in years past, it was only on election day that your employer had to let you leave early so that you could vote. Well, in the state of Texas, we increased that to all 12 days of early voting. We have expanded it and we've made it easier for people that are here legally and that are legally allowed to vote. We've made it easier for them to vote. What was frustrating is to hear people on TV at the national level lying and saying that there are hundreds of thousands of people. John Tallarico said there are hundreds of thousands of Texans that don't have a picture ID. And so rather than saying, but the beauty, the blessing is that Texas provides a picture ID for voting for anyone that wants one for free, he just continued on about this lie that, you know, these people can't get an ID to vote.
They can't get in the car. They can't take a bus. They can't read to know where the DMV is. They're, you know, they relegate these imaginary people to being cavemen, for lack of a better word. It's insulting.
The bigotry of low expectations is just, it's stunning. It's mind numbing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love it. I really do. I love what you're doing. And thank you so much for spending this time with us today. Is there anything that you want to leave the listener with before we go?
No, I enjoyed spending time with you today, Tracy. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And we're going to be following this very, very closely. So thank you for your hard work. And we look forward to following this bill along and seeing when those Democrats come back, hopefully in handcuffs, because that's what they deserve. It's Texas law.
It is what they deserve. We'll catch you.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.